This is Max Watkinson from the Loyola Greyhounds, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analyst, my Hopkins homeboy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, great show on tap today. We've got six top 20 matchups to cover, including a couple top 10 matchups. One of those top 20 matchups features Loyola and Army in a pivotal Patriot League matchup. And we will talk to Loyola senior goalkeeper Max Watkinson as the Greyhounds prepare for that game. And of course, we'll preview the biggest games in college lacrosse taking place this week. So Dixie, let's get it. Dix, this is a huge week. There's rivalry week part two, plus some key conference games like that Loyola Army game that I referenced. And then the weather is really matching. It's like that time of year where everything's coming together. And it's going to be a fun week.
How did you do last weekend? Because you were giddier than I don't know what going into last weekend with all the great matchups. Were you able to catch a lot of it? Were you couch bound? What was the situation in the Flynn household?
I did get to watch a lot of lacrosse last Saturday. Great sports weekend between college lacrosse on Saturday, a little bit of baseball, and then the Masters. So great sports weekend. I had a lot of, my kids were doing stuff all day Sunday, two lacrosse games, a baseball doubleheader, a basketball practice. But I was able to squeeze in some math. So I was glad the lacrosse was all on Saturday. But I went 5-4 last week. So 9 games, I was hoping to like push my record up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So now I think I'm, 30-22 on the season.
Are you still in that elite percentage that Craig McMichael presented to us?
58%. Yeah, it puts me elite like Joe Flacco.
Got a lot of feedback on our Give and Go last week, our all-time favorite Ravens. Some people pointed out that we omitted Jamal Lewis was one. Some people said Vinny Testaverde. Another one was the linebackers from the Super Bowl team, Peter Boulware, Jamie Sharper, they were solid.
T-Sizzle.
I think a lot of people bypass Suggs because of his off-field shenanigans. I know I do in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but he was...
great player.
He was a great player. I mean, we had to pick our top three. We didn't have a lot of...
oh, I know. I'm just giving you some feedback. Matt Stover was another one. Justin Tucker. Mm-hmm. Because for a while, especially Matt Stover was winning a lot of games for the Ravens. And then Justin Tucker just had insane kicks until, it became kind of the norm to try field goals from the other team's defensive end.
I mean, Justin Tucker was the most accurate kicker in the history of the NFL and had the longest field goal ever.
Right.
At one point, so he was up there for sure. But again, you're picking the top three and.
Yeah, it's hard. And a lot of times you vote with your heart, too. Like, that's, Steve Smith to me is just a guy who was gritty and tough, and Anquan Boldin same way. I mean, remember Anquan Boldin when he was playing for the Cardinals, like, broke his face? Like, he caught a pass in the end zone and got destroyed. And Kurt Warner, ran down and was, visibly shaken because, Anquan Boldin literally broke his face.
Is that the game they put Rod Tidwell in? At wide receiver, and that's when he had his breakout game. And she said, "Show me the money."
Was that the? Yeah, I don't know that movie as well as you do. You really like that Jerry Maguire, don't you?
It's a good Cardinals reference. Cardinals wide receiver reference.
I thought you were going to give me a Jonathan Lipnicki reference. Wasn't he the little kid in that movie?
Bees and dogs, they both can smell fear. What's he say? Something like that?
I have no idea.
He's got some funny line like that. Hey, speaking of crazy situations, guy breaking his face, what is going on at UMBC?
Your
What is
guess
going
is as good
on?
as mine. I have friends whose kids play for the Retrievers, and I'm also friends with Ryan Moran. I have not been in touch with him until the last couple of weeks. Just sent him a couple of texts and he got back. But what a crazy situation. Obviously, it was an incident and looked like it had resolution finally after what? Gosh, we're talking 7 months, right? It was like September of last year.
Yes, it happened in the fall.
Yeah.
So just if people don't know, and we're not going to get into the details, but something happened between two teammates in like a dorm. And then it was reported, and the administration found out, and then they didn't like the way that Coach Moran handled it, I guess, and he was suspended with pay, I believe, indefinitely. And they wouldn't talk to him. They wouldn't. There's like not a lot of communication. And then I couldn't believe when we were talking about this in early January, December, that a school administration would let a sport start its traditional season without a head coach in place. It's shocking to me, like just complete mismanagement. And again, we're talking about this. Men's lacrosse is a pretty big deal at UMBC. I mean, this is a school that doesn't have a football team. Men's lacrosse has great tradition there. It's a prominent Division I sport at
I mean,
UMBC.
they've won national championships at the Division II level in that sport.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And again, we're talking, this is in the middle of, like, this is in Baltimore County. Like, this is like a lacrosse hotbed. It's a big deal there. I couldn't believe that whole situation could unfold, emerge like that. And then you finally get some kind of resolution, and he's reinstated as coach, and then they terminate him.
Yeah, I guess the story there was he needed to do some Title IX training, and when he reached into the athletic department to see what that training entailed, they didn't reply. And then they said, "Come up for a meeting." And they said, "You can either resign or be terminated." And he said, "I'm not stepping down." So, yeah, it's a really unfortunate situation. You think about those kids, those players. And it's not like Coach Moran is not a popular coach or a well-liked coach.
That is another part of this. I've had some non-lacrosse people, just friends of mine, who saw the story on Friday as it unfolded and reached out and said, "What's going on in your music?" I didn't even know what they were talking about because I just heard that he had been reinstated. And I looked it up and I couldn't believe it. And then people were asking me, like, "Oh, what kind of guy?" I'm like, "I don't know him. I've met him. I think we've talked to him. But every person I know that does know him thinks he's a super solid guy, like good coach, nice guy. Can't understand how this would happen for a guy who's been at that school for 10 years as a head coach. It's unbelievable."
I mean, you look at UMBC, and obviously they've had some struggles athletically in terms of what was it, the swimming coach that was a problem and ultimately committed suicide. Then you have the softball situation where I believe it was a husband-wife tandem. The husband was fired for inappropriate behavior. Then shortly thereafter, his wife, who was the head coach, was fired. And the team was split on that. Like it was half the team supported the coach, and then the other half were like, this is the best thing ever. And the school made the decision not to continue the softball season because they couldn't field what they felt like was a competitive team, a cohesive team. That's not the case with this men's lacrosse situation. The vast majority of people that I've spoken with are in full support of Coach Moran and are completely flabbergasted by this situation.
To offer some insight, there is an attorney who seems to be representing Coach Moran on, and he's on social media, on Twitter. His name's Don Jackson, and his Twitter handle is D Maurice Jackson, and he's been pretty vocal.
He's not bashful.
He is not. He's putting some of the information out there. So that's where I'm getting some of this. But one of the things that I read is that in all of Ryan's time there, They've had an athletic director who's been there for at least a couple of years. He's only met with the athletic director three times ever, including one time when he was called in to be fired. Again, men's lacrosse is a very prominent sport there. I would say probably it goes men's basketball, then men's lacrosse at UMBC in terms of like the hierarchy
Hierarchy.
of sports there. I can't believe that they've only had three conversations in person ever. As someone who worked in college athletics for 2 decades, I cannot comprehend that. I can't wrap my head around the mismanagement of the coaching staff. Let's just say the coaching staff there across the department. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And we wish him the best. And,
There is a GoFundMe page set up for Coach Moran, which I think has been quite active and quite robust, because he has some pretty steep legal fees with this thing going on for such a long period of time. And I think, again, there's two things. One, the players have just been in purgatory, but UMBC is playing well. I mean, they're in a position to make the America East tournament. They will make the America East tournament. They could win that conference, get the automatic qualifier, and go to the NCAA tournament. The other thing is, with this behavior and the way Coach Moran has been treated, what kind of talent are they going to attract? They said they're going to be starting a nationwide search when the season is over, if they haven't already. Who's going to want that job to work in that environment?
I don't know, I feel very confident that Coach Moran will land on his feet somewhere else soon, and someone's going to get a great coach either as like a top assistant or a head coach somewhere soon. So
Yeah.
it's crazy. All right, I had to get that off my chest.
I
I
love
had
it, man. I love it. The
yeah,
D-Fly passion, the
I
fire.
had to get that again for someone who's watched that athletic department for decades. As someone who, I worked at Towson University, I worked at Johns Hopkins University. I have friends who work there now. I have friends who have worked there in the past. I live 10 minutes away from there. It's just mind-boggling that
Yeah.
what can happen there has happened there. Some other mind-boggling stuff, Dixie, is this schedule that we have this week.
Yes.
Again, real pivotal games as the conference tournaments get started soon. And we're going to get into that along with some rivalries, some top 10 matchups, and a lot of top 20 matchups. And I just want to remind everyone who's listening, our game previews and the podcast is brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm, specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. All right, Dixie. Friday night, your call on this game. Number 16, Penn State, plays at number 19, Rutgers. Games at 8 o'clock. You'll be doing this on the Big Ten Network. Both these teams are desperate for a win. Penn State is the one who's a little bit more baffling. They were 2-0 in the Big Ten, and now they sit at 2-2 after two close, kind of I'm shaking your head kind of losses. The Nittany Lions are a 3.5 goal favorite in this game with a line of 19.5. What can people expect in this game?
Trophy game for the Friendship Cup between Penn State and Rutgers. I'll be with Joe B. Good doubleheader on Friday night on the Big Ten Network. 6 o'clock, it's Ohio State and Michigan. So the game, lacrosse style, and a game that all of a sudden has become real intriguing with the surge of Michigan over the last couple of weeks. But Penn State, such a hard team to figure out. They've got five top 20 wins: Princeton, Cornell, Yale, Ohio State, Maryland. And then they've got three losses that leave you scratching your head: Villanova, Navy, and Michigan. I really thought they were going to get the ship righted after they lost at Homewood Field. But Michigan comes in on their senior day. Hunter Aquino was back. Andrew Beard was back. But Penn State turned the ball over 26 times.
26.
26 times against the Wolverines.
Ugh.
Hunter Taylor for Michigan played awesome. And there you have it. Penn State right now sitting with an RPI of 13. Strength of schedule's around an 8. Rutgers has really hit some hard times. Yeah, you think about 3 quarters ago in Rutgers lacrosse, they were really handling Michigan in Ann Arbor, came out. The Wolverines blitzed them in the second half to take a come-from-behind victory. And then last weekend, Rutgers scored the first goal of the game against Maryland, and that was it. I think Maryland got up 8-1, 9-1, and just, you know, kind of just choked the life out of that game. Rutgers couldn't win a faceoff. They still missed their faceoff man, Scarelli. Carden Stoller's been under attack. Offensively, they've been figured out. I mean, they only scored two goals against Maryland. That being said, this game is in SHI Stadium. Rutgers is a different team at home. They'll have a great crowd. They always have great support. It should be a very vibrant atmosphere for these two ball clubs. But again, with Rutgers not having a faceoff man, and Penn State has not one but two really good guys, Colby Baldwin and Reed Gills, I just don't see Rutgers getting the ball enough in this to have enough possessions, but we'll see. Again, rivalry week, Friday night, late night, under the lights, anything can happen. Friendship Cup is at stake. But Penn State really needs this one, because right now a lot of folks have them kind of bubble out on the NCAA tournament. Getting a win here and then making a run in the Big Ten tournament will really be beneficial for them.
A win here plays them 7-5. I don't even know if they made, and they have enough good wins. Like, I mean, that win over Princeton is holding up. They might have a chance, like, without really making noise in the Big Ten tournament. I don't know.
The interesting thing is Penn State sits with an RPI right now of 13. Ohio State's at 15. Penn State beat Ohio State head-to-head. However, a lot of folks that you look at, a lot of pundits have Ohio State in over Penn State. And then some other people have it flipped. So again, there's still a lot of ground to be covered, but they will not do themselves any more favors if they drop this one to Rutgers.
No, I think if they drop this game, they're done. If they, in terms, unless they win the Big Ten tournament, they need to win this game. But, I, you know, every win counts at this point in the season. I'm going to take the Nittany Lions in this game, but I think it's going to be a little closer than 3.5 goals. All right, moving on to Saturday. Five awesome games. Our first one features Army and Loyola. Before we get into the details of this game, let's bring in our guest this week, Loyola senior goalie Max Watkinson. Please welcome into the show senior goalkeeper from the 18th-ranked Loyola Greyhounds, Max Watkinson. Max, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, Max, thanks for taking the time. We know it's a busy week and a busy time of the year with a really, really big game coming up for Loyola. But just to kick things off, you're no stranger to podcasts. You have your own.
Yeah.
And so, you know, wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about that and your experience behind the mic.
Yeah, it all started about, I guess, a year and a half ago, last fall. Got clearance to Ryan Eigenbrod and Coach Toomey. They kind of highlight a little bit of guys and want to talk to our captains and kind of showcase them a little bit last year. So guys include of Joe Houlihan, Matt Dixon, Remy Reynolds, guys like that. Kind of just showcase, you know, what brought them to Loyola and you know, some of the stuff about their lacrosse backgrounds. And then it's kind of a little bit transformed to me and my buddy kind of talk a little bit about sports, just kind of what's going on, some of the stuff that we're interested in. And it's been, you know, kind of a use of time for me to just relax and, you know, outlet a little bit of the stuff that I'm thinking in the sports world.
What is the name of your podcast? Who's your partner and where can people find you?
Yeah. The podcast is Crease Talk on YouTube, and I have run it with, I have a couple episodes with my good buddy from high school, Luke Trotta. So we talk a little bit NBA. So every now and again, when I'm able to, with how busy the spring season is, upload a video, kind of just talking a little bit about the landscape of the league.
Sure. So you're a local guy. You went to St. Paul's School, not too far from Loyola University. And you mentioned talking to the captains as to why they chose Loyola. Why did Max Watkinson choose the Greyhounds?
For me, in my recruiting process, I didn't get a ton of attention. So when Coach Toomey texted me saying, you know, getting a call, and this was during COVID, so we had the lovely Zoom calls. to get on a call and talk to him, I was like, this is a no-brainer. My mom works at Loyola. She's worked here since, I think, 2010, 2011. So I've been able to go to games all my childhood for free and watch the national championship team in person that year. And, as soon as he gave me my offer, I was like, it's a done deal. Like, this is where I want to go to school. It's always where I want to go to school. And I'm just lucky and blessed enough to have been presented the opportunity to go do so.
So your first 2 years, you're learning the ropes. You got some older guys in front of you, but last year as a junior, you get your opportunity to start. We talk about it a lot with regard to the psychological component of goaltending in addition to the physical part. How hard is it to, even though you're a freshman, you're a sophomore, how hard is it to wait your turn?
It's definitely difficult. I definitely had the expectations of day one trying to compete and go win the job. I don't think you're treated as anything less. But it's definitely tough when you feel like you're ready and can perform and you're not quite getting the opportunities yet. I was fortunate enough to start a couple games sophomore year when Luke Stout went down. So you kind of gained a little bit of experience. And I think being able to be presented with those opportunities, you just confirmed that, this is something I want to do, and I had the confidence to go and believe that I could do it, and it kind of led to the next year and this year, fortunately.
Are there any goalies that you've modeled your game after?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Charlie Toomey.
Yeah, that's a politically correct answer.
The only right answer.
The only right answer. That's a good question. Honestly, like growing up, I didn't really engage with a ton of lacrosse until probably I committed. So I was kind of unfamiliar with like a lot of goalies, I feel like, that were playing at the time. I mean, guys like today, I think Brett Dobson and Colin Kurst are awesome. And the way that their play styles, I think, are fairly similar. I mean, I think every goalie has their differences, but guys like that, I admire, and they're unbelievable. And then a couple of just guys that I worked with, all my life, and not necessarily my model, but definitely like competed with every single day and played club with him, was Carton Stoller, who's now at Rutgers and is killing it. And being able to kind of compete with a guy like that and give tips to each other of how to improve, I think was very vital in a development process through club ball.
So that's pretty unique. You're from Baltimore, the Baltimore area. You go to St. Paul's, you play goalie, but you really didn't eat, breathe, and sleep lacrosse until you committed. That's unique.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely engaged, and I knew what was going on with Loyola lacrosse specifically. And I guess I can point to guys like Jack Runkle and Jacob Stover, although I think they play much differently than I do. I mean, but those guys are legends at Loyola. But I mean, I was always, my dad played basketball growing up and in college, so I was always watching basketball, watching football, and I don't know if I could have named more than like 10 pro lacrosse players before I like was a junior in high school. So it is definitely, I feel like, the kind of, it's a little unique compared to a lot of other guys in the Baltimore area.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool. I mean,
Yeah, it's a little different.
So this has been a big bounce back season for the Greyhounds offense. You've been leading the defense and holding down the back end, but your offense has been much improved. Who are some of those players on the offensive end that have been making a difference in 2026?
Yeah, I mean, certainly not a player, but I mean, definitely a reason is Coach Ward being the new offense coordinator. I mean, has those guys prepared, kind of watching film a little bit with him and how prepared and organized he is, it's something to see, and it's clear and evident why those guys are successful. I mean, certainly, guys like Matthew Minakis for the past 4 years has done a great job. And then you have guys like Keenan Everhart, Mason Cook, who I think he's second in goals right now in the country, something like that, or second in goals per game. I mean, he's unbelievable. So being able to go up against guys like that in practice too, and when they're at a high level, makes it a lot more exciting. So I think it starts for those guys in the midfield. I think those guys who competed, and we have a lot of depth. I feel like we've always had a lot of depth in the midfield, and I think they're being put in, the best possible positions for them that have really allowed them to succeed.
Saturday is going to be a really special day, not just the importance of this matchup with Army, chance to clinch the Patriot League, like number one seed in the tournament, but it'll be senior day at Ridley Field. As you and your classmates get ready to play your last regular season game at Wrigley. Like, what's that experience been like, and what type of emotions do you feel like will come to surface on Saturday?
Yeah, it's certainly a weird one that it kind of flew by. I think it's a very cliche thing, but man, it went by fast. It's definitely a surreal experience. I haven't been able to play in a ton of games that have really meant a lot at Wrigley. This is one of them, and I think it's such a cool experience to be a part of. It being senior day, I think is, you know, not necessarily cherry on top, but it's cool to be and to spend that moment with a bunch of guys that we spent the last 4 years with, and you know, I've become some of my best friends. It'll be a fun atmosphere. I'm sure we'll have a crowd behind us, and you know, hopefully we're able to get out a win with, you know, a very good Army team that's historically, or for the past couple of years, really dominated the Patriot League. So it's exciting, and like the only words I can really describe is it's pretty cool. Like, it's pretty cool to be a part of.
Loyola is unique in that the years they play Hopkins in Maryland, they get them at home. Mm-hmm. And then when they, you know, then they get them on the road, and those early February games get a ton of student support. And even when they walk up to Homewood Field for the Hopkins game, and things seem to trail off a little bit in Patriot League play, but should be a nice day. Mm-hmm. Top tier team coming in with a lot on the line. I expect Wrigley to probably have you guys have probably had the best crowd so far of the season.
Yeah, other than probably the Hopkins game, probably should be. At least the home game wise.
At Wrigley, yeah. Homewood, you guys had a lot of support.
And it's always better doing it at home. I mean, that place is amazing to play at.
How would you best describe the defense that's in front of you?
I think having a guy who's a fifth-year senior who started for a couple of years, Joe Houlihan, having him in front of you, and how calm of a person he is, I think is something that's very helpful. We've kind of transitioned and we've moved Chase Gregory all across the field. He's been LSM. He's been close defenseman. I mean, he's a heck of a player. So, I mean, it just proves how versatile he is. Jake Wilson has really improved this year and has taken strides forward. Off the ball, he's always been an amazing on-ball defender. So seeing him kind of continue to become better off the ball and more connected with us, and as we have a veteran defense, I think it's a lot easier too, because communication is just there. And then having like other guys fill in from time to time, you know, through man down or in other instances. Matt Everson has started a couple of games. You know, that was my roommate from the freshman sophomore year. So seeing him be able to start a couple of games and play is awesome. And to be a part of that with them, that experience is really cool. Ryan Kane as well, coming down a man down, and he started Georgetown as well. I think he's got a really bright future ahead of him as well. And then I think just how connected we've been over the past couple of games through our game plans, executing what Coach Duana said, and everything's just starting to click, I feel like, at the right time. And you know, it's always better to be playing your best across in late April and May than it is at the beginning of the year, and I feel like that's kind of where we're at.
You mind if we go back a couple of weeks when you played Boston University?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
You made a lot of saves that day, but more importantly, you know, I got your first point scored.
Goalie goal.
Yeah.
First you had an assist, and then you had a goal. Like later in the game, you know, your first points of your career. Like, what was that like? Like, what's that feeling like when you see it and you make the, you know, the pass or you take the shot? You know, what's going through your head when that happens?
Yeah. Well, first off, all week in film, we're talking about that the situation presents itself. Don't shoot the ball. So you got that in your mind. Then you see the score, and I think it's 9-1 at the time, and the goalie's out of the goal, and you're like, well, I might as well. Like, I got none to lose, and. You know, I knew we had backup, and I fired it in. It felt good, and I said, you know, this might go in. And it did, kind of blacked out. But, I mean, I think in terms of the pure, like, adrenaline and joy, I think it'll be, and I've made, like, a joke about it, but it'll be, like, my wedding day, the birth of my children, scoring a full field goal against BU. That'll be number three. So, yeah, definitely cooler than making saves. So, I guess the question's, why did I pick this position to begin with? But it was a... It was so cool.
You're one of the better like shooters on the team. Why aren't you taking more shots?
Yeah, shot percentage wise now, yeah, for sure.
We talked about how important this game is. It's senior day. The weather's going to be great. There's going to be a huge crowd at Wrigley. What do the Hounds need to get a win against Army on Saturday?
You know, Army's a team that's not going to make, you know, silly mistakes. They're going to be very disciplined. They, you know, tend to try to play a slower style. So I think it's capitalizing on the opportunities that you get. I think defensively for us, it's just communicating through everything. We'll have, a good game plan going into it, one that we can trust, which we always do. And it's just about going out there and executing. I think we've been a lot better in the clear and not making those like same mistakes that we did last year that I think really cost us at times. And then offensively, I got a ton of trust in those guys to go and score goals. I mean, they've been incredible. I don't know how many they're averaging right now goals per game, but it feels like a lot recently. So, I got a lot of confidence in those guys and the guys in front of me, and I'm confident in myself to go out there and be able to make some saves, and hopefully that all translates to going out and winning the game and clinching first place and having the Patriot League run through Ridley.
All right, you ready for some quick hitters, Max?
Yeah, let's do it.
What is your all-time favorite sports team, any sport favorite
Yeah,
team?
I think it's the Ravens for sure. Watched them since I was 3 years old, the good and the bad. So it's gotta go them.
Scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about the new Ravens era, like post-Harbaugh?
I'm gonna go 10. I'm a ride for the boys, and hopefully things are a little bit better than they have been over the past couple of years, and they go and win the Super Bowl. That'd be pretty cool again.
This is a common theme when we ask any of our guests who are like one of the Ravens fans, like excitement is very high.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. What is the best Loyola lacrosse tradition?
I mean, I think the corporate answer is definitely going to Sabatino's every Friday for a home game. I mean, for me, like, it's not really a tradition, but I think just getting to spend like every single day in a locker room with a bunch of guys that you respect and enjoy being around, I think is, the greatest tradition that I could possibly be a part of.
What's the best spot for a post-game family meal that's near the Loyola campus?
We've typically gone to Mount Washington Tavern. That's what we've done. So, but I think just being right next to the Swallow and going a couple times after someone wins this year, I think I'm going to roll a Swallow at the Hollow.
All right. Both great choices. Why do you wear number 25?
The number 25 was passed down from my dad who wore it in college, and then my sister wore it in high school. She ended up changing her number to 20 in college. But I got the opportunity. I saw 25 was open, and I was like, "Oh, well, it must be." So, stuck with it all 4 years.
Max, we get one answer or the other. We get an answer like yours, where it's like, it has some history, some meaning, I chose this one. And then we get other guys who are like, I don't know. It's like I got texted a bunch of numbers before my freshman year and I picked one. And
Yeah,
I just
or that's the number they gave me, and I am too lazy to change it.
I love it. We're all kind of like Baltimore area people, and I love living here in Maryland. What do you think is the best thing about living in Baltimore?
It's a really good question. I mean, I'm not the biggest like fan of it other than Crab, but I mean, Crab for sure is definitely up there. What else?
Old Bay seasoning.
Yeah, Old Bay seasoning. I mean, it used to be like, I feel like in high school it used to be cheap public golf courses, but now that's kind of changed a little bit, and they're starting to charge like $60 for a round. So it used to be like 30. It was great.
Who is the best chef or cook on the Loyola team?
I'm unfamiliar with some of the other guys in their room situations, but for us here at our house, it's got to be Luke Murphy. Like every single morning I wake up, he's already up making eggs and bacon, and it smells amazing. So I would be amiss if I didn't say him.
All right. What's your when you guys go on the road, what's your favorite Patriot League road venue to play in?
Good question. Lafayette had a good setup this past weekend. We got a nice setup. I think the better question might be the worst, and that's I got stuck with another goalie in the same bed against Bucknell last year. So it was me and this goalie sleeping right next to each other in a twin bed, Carter Hagen. So it was certainly an experience, one that's forgettable, but we ended up winning our first game after that, so I guess it was a good omen.
Awesome.
So wait a minute. You and
We
Carter were in the same bed?
were in the same twin bed, and
This is a big guy.
yeah, well, we were getting ready for bed, and he's, going, getting ready, and he starts taking off all his clothes, and I start getting a little worried and sweating where this is leading to. So, thankfully, he stopped. But yeah, that's certainly an experience that me and him were somehow the ones who got stuck sharing a twin.
Wow. Not
Yeah.
even freshman.
No, I don't know how that happened.
And when you said goalie, I was going to go with Wojcik that you got stuck with in the same
No,
bed.
he's small.
The
He's small. It would have been
Woj
fun.
bomb.
Besides the men's lacrosse team, which Loyola team would you say you have the most friends on?
You know, I know a couple guys are really close to men's soccer. For me, I've been fortunate enough to be with a couple guys on men's basketball. Had a guy I actually grew up playing basketball with, Jordan Stemke, who's actually transferring out now, but he was on the team for the past 2 years, 3 years, and he's an awesome player. So I would say the men's basketball team for sure.
All right, last question. If Dixie or I walk into the Greyhound locker room, who's running the aux and what are we going to hear most likely?
Oh gosh, I don't think you guys want to log in for that. It's always in camera. He's always there about 2 hours early, I think, just to play music on the speaker. He's got like set days for different playlists. A lot of guys will say, they'll ask for him to skip quite a few songs. Before games, it's always Chase Brody. So either one of those two would have to be the answer.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Hey, Max, thanks for joining us on the D Fly and Dixie podcast. And but best of luck to you in the Greyhounds.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys so much for having me.
All right, Dixie, this is a huge game. Number 14 Army against number 18 Loyola. Army is 4-2 in the Patriot League. Loyola is 5-1. If Loyola wins this game, they clinch the number one seed in the Patriot League tournament. They do have to play Navy next week, but it won't matter whether they win or lose because they'll have the tiebreakers and they will be the number one seed and host the Patriot League tournament at Wrigley Field, which is a massive advantage. This game is on at noon. Fans can catch it on ESPN Plus. Army has won 6 straight in the series and 8 of the last 9. It's a big game.
What a turnaround for Loyola. 3-11 a year ago. They couldn't score. They could not score goals. They could not win faceoffs. Now they're scoring, and Carson Hall at the faceoff dot is playing really, really well. A couple years ago, it was Loyola Army, and there was like a scenario, if Loyola beat Army, they could be the number one seed and host. Or if they lose to Army, they would be the number 6 seed.
I remember that.
That's how like jumbled the standings were. And of course, Loyola lost that game, went in as a 6 seed and, you know, didn't win the tournament and didn't go to the NCAAs. Things are different in Evergreen these days. Justin Ward, Max mentioned it, has made such a huge contribution, and he faces his old ball club in the Army Black Knights, who are coming off just a gigantic emotional win over Navy. My question marks here, who can control the tempo? How does Loyola adapt to the big crowd? They really haven't had big crowds this year. I think the last really big crowd they had for a game was last year against Hopkins at Wrigley, talking about at Wrigley. How do they defend the Plunkett brothers? You know, Hill Plunkett, Evan Plunkett. How do they shoot against Sean Byrne, who's a step up in goaltending from what they've seen over the last month, you know, with the exception of Georgetown and Anderson Moore. But Sean Byrne is a terrific netminder. You know, flip side, how does Army defend their old offensive coordinator? Because Loyola's just, they're running in transition. They are pushing tempo. They're taking risks. That, you know, you really just didn't see them doing the last couple of years. Should be a highly entertaining game. Great atmosphere at Wrigley. I mean, you got two monster games right down the street from each other. You can catch both. Noon, you have Loyola Army. Then at 2, shoot, leave your daggone car on Cold Spring and just walk, you know, walk down to Homewood and catch Maryland and Hopkins. But this will be this is going to be a playoff like game.
Absolutely. And I like Loyola. I like Loyola at home on senior day in this game. Moving down to Tobacco Road, number 1 Notre Dame, who's proven themselves much of the season, but especially in the last couple of weeks, knocking off the number 1 team 2 weeks in a row. They are now number 1. They're ranked 8. They're 8-1 overall. 2-1 in the ACC. They will play at number 15, Duke, who's lost three straight, including two in the ACC. This game's at noon. It's on ESPNU. Duke's lost three straight, Cuse, UVA, and Cornell. And Notre Dame has beaten Duke seven straight times in this series. I think they're going to make it eight straight.
ESPNU, Mike Corey and Quinn Kesenick will have this game. And Duke has lost three in a row. Syracuse, Virginia, and then their latest setback was against Cornell. So they're running out of opportunities to score big wins, not only in this situation with Notre Dame and North Carolina left on the docket, but they're in jeopardy of not making the ACC tournament. So this is really do or die time with respect to this game. And congratulations, Aiden McGuire, the number one pick in the PLL draft. But Duke is just going to have to really bring it. And Notre Dame's a team that lost that game against Virginia, but has really picked themselves up with gritty wins over Richmond and now North Carolina. And they really handcuffed the Carolina offense last weekend, and also were able to neutralize Brady Wambach at the faceoff dot. So I expect them to employ a similar game plan against the Blue Devils, but I also expect Duke to be really emotional and come out flying all over the field to try to, I don't want to use the word intimidate the Irish, but really maybe energize themselves and energize the crowd. I just don't know if Duke has enough offensive weapons, offensive firepower to overtake Notre Dame. That defense for Notre Dame is really playing buttoned up. I think Richard Ellie between the pipes is much improved. You know, big game with a lot of ramifications. And, you know, are we just seeing, you know, the air slowly leak out of the Duke balloon in 2026?
And I like the Irish now. All right, this is a game, the next game, UNC versus Virginia, several weeks ago, didn't look like it was going to be the game that it has turned out to be this week. UNC is number three in the country. They're 10-2 overall and 1-1 in the ACC. Virginia's climbed up to number nine in the Kane Media poll. They're up to 7-5 overall. They're 2-1 in the ACC. This game is at noon, and it's will be streaming on the ACC Network Extra. This would be a really fun game to watch.
Yeah, and I think we'd be remiss not to talk about the attendance of last weekend's games. I mean, just a lot of these big, you know, Army-Navy and Notre Dame, North Carolina, the Duke-Cornell game on Long Island and other matchups just had great crowd. You know, Ohio State was a great crowd to watch them play Hopkins. There was a nice crowd at University of Maryland for the Rutgers game. I expect similar this weekend. Jake Merritt only made three saves last weekend up in the dome as Virginia faltered. And Carolina, they are going to be hungry this weekend, and they've got to kind of look at the film. Not kind of, they have to look at the film and figure out what Notre Dame did to them on the faceoff, because I think that's going to become a blueprint for teams down the stretch here against Brady Wambach to try to neutralize him a little bit. You know, Brendan Millen's playing at a very high level for Virginia, trying to figure out who might cover him for Carolina. Will it be Cole Scheim? I think Peter Thoman gets McCabe Millen. But you got to be impressed with guys like Ryan Colsey and Truett Sunderland's having a terrific year for Virginia. My big thing here is I think Virginia gets back on track with regard to the faceoff, with regard to possessions. And I think they pose some significant problems for the Virginia defense. How will they cover? Will Virginia go zone on Carolina? I believe Virginia went zone a little bit against Towson. Feels like it's like 4 years ago, you know, that we called, Clark and I called that game. So that'll be interesting to see if Virginia goes zone at all. But I mean, look, when you talk about a much improved team, to your point, after that Towson loss, and then Virginia beat Utah, then they dominated Dartmouth, but then that win against Notre Dame followed up with a victory over Duke, which just doesn't happen. I mean, what was that, like a 24 years they
It's
hadn't
like
beaten the Blue
20,
Devils in the regular season?
21.
So this will be a terrific game.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked, and I'm sure a lot of fans were, that anyone held North Carolina to 5 goals. I remember Josh Davey on our show last week was saying that, like, this is just a matter of time until they get to 13, 14, 15 goals. What do they do to what changes do they make? Was it just not getting possessions enough, or do they just have to, how do they get their mojo back?
I mean, I think that getting the ball, and I think getting back to the way that they played against both Harvard and Syracuse, a ton of off-ball movement. I mean, when North Carolina is dodging and moving, they are really, really hard to defend. And I think in watching the game back, because I was only able to watch the first quarter live before I had to go to work, the first quarter they looked pretty good. They were up 2-0. But I think after I was able to watch it back a little bit, there was a little bit too much spectating on the offensive end, a little too much standing around, which has been a bugaboo of Carolina's offense a little bit. But again, they were in foreign territory. A lot of people on the berm over there. I
Great
think they
crowd.
probably had a lot to say, which is fine. I will say this too. I think. Yeah, Kevin Corrigan definitely had an impact on that game in terms of the officiating, how he was dealing with the officials. There was one play particular in the first quarter where the camera cut to Kevin talking to one of the referees in a very animated fashion. Ball went down the other end. Carolina came out very physical in that game. Carolina knocks an Irish player over. It's the single side official. It's right in front of him in the trail, who had just been chewed out by Kevin Corrigan, makes a hold call from across the field, and it's like, okay, Coach Corrigan, that's why he's Coach Corrigan. He just bought himself a call to keep possession. So,
Well, you've been at it as long as he has and had his success in
yeah.
playing at home. You get a call once in a while. All right, well, that's going to be a great game. I like the heels in this one. I'll take UNC to bounce back and get a W against Virginia. All right, Dix, the next game is at 1 o'clock. Fans can catch on ESPN Plus, and it's Princeton at Harvard in Boston. This game is going to be phenomenal. It's a pivotal Ivy League game. These two teams are tied at 3-1 atop the Ivy League standings with Cornell. So it's really jockeying for position and a top, like a seed in the Ivy League tournament, which is in a couple of weeks. Princeton's number two in the country, 9-2 overall. Harvard's number nine, also 9-2. This game might be 30 points, 30 goals might be scored in this game. It's going to be a high scoring game.
It could be, but remember we said that about Princeton and Penn State, a couple months ago, and we were like, hammer the over, and it was well under. Harvard 7 RPI right now, Princeton at 4. Harvard's strength of schedule, 33. Big wins over Syracuse, top 20 wins over Syracuse, BU, and Penn. And then strength of schedule for Princeton at a 14, wins over Syracuse, Carolina, Yale, Maryland, and Penn. This is a Harvard team coming off of a tough loss to Cornell last weekend, and now, like, the questions are popping up. Do they have enough defense to make a run, not only at an Ivy League championship, but a deep run into the NCAA tournament? Princeton offensively is a juggernaut. They were terrific last weekend in a win over Penn, but their defense is better this year, and I think that that's a big difference. I mean, even if they're 2 or 3 goals better than last year, that's significant when you talk about this. So a lot of people have Princeton kind of penciled in for that Final Four championship weekend. But Harvard's they're gonna bring it, man. I mean, they're going to be excited to play this game and try to really bounce back in good fashion. you know, if I'm Harvard, I've got to worry about offensive weapons all over the field, in Chad Palumbo and Nate Kibiri, and with regard to Tucker Wade. And then how about Ryan Kraddick? I mean, the guy was like a highlight film last weekend against Penn with some of the saves that he was making. I think Graham Stevens, the goaltender for Harvard, has kind of dipped a little bit after a really, really hot start. He's a terrific goaltender. Can he recapture some of that mojo? And you need guys like Logan Ipp and Teddy Malone, and John Arndt had a great first half of the season. He's kind of tailed off a little bit. They kind of need those guys to catch a little bit more fire. But I mean, this one could come down to goaltending. If we are talking about a 16-15 game, let's say both goalies are around the 8-9 save mark, you know, who can make that ninth save? Who can make that 10th save to be the difference in the game?
Well, I'll give the edge to Ryan Kraddick in the goalie matchup. And I like Princeton winning this game on the road. And Dix, finally, last game, and save the best for last. The greatest rivalry in college lacrosse. It'll be homecoming. The Johns Hopkins Blue Jays at Homewood Field on Saturday. Number 7, Maryland, against number 13, Johns Hopkins. 2 o'clock, live on ESPNU. The Blue Jays lead this all-time series 77-51-1, dating back to 1895, first time they play. Always a big matchup when these two teams play, and going to be another beautiful one at Homewood Field this weekend.
It's homecoming at Hopkins. I've been advised to get there early. I'll have the call with Paul Carcaterra. I can't wait. I've never called a Hopkins Maryland game with Carc. Like, I've done Hopkins, Maryland with so many other broadcasters, but never Carc. So I think it's going to be unique perspective. You know, his brother played there at Hopkins. I played at Hopkins. This will be the 6th week in a row. I've had Maryland for every single one of their Big Ten games and their Virginia games. So I know Maryland very, very well, and I've watched them get better every week. Hopkins right now, an RPI of 6 and a strength of schedule of 2. They have got outstanding metrics, but they're just too inconsistent. They've been very inconsistent in 2026. I think Hopkins is at their best when they play in transition, when it's chaos. The 6-on-6 can be minimally invasive on the offensive end, but they've beaten Virginia, Towson, Penn State, and Loyola is a quality win at this juncture with the way the Greyhounds have played. Bad loss to Rutgers, the way it stands right now. Maryland, RPI of 10, strength of schedule 12, wins over Virginia, Ohio State, and Loyola as well. And no bad losses for the Terrapins. This is a game, face-off dot, Henry Dodge, Joe Hobot. Wings are going to be critical. Reese DeSico for Hopkins has over 20 calls turnovers as a short stick D midi. He's terrific. How do they match up with Spanos, Irksa, those players? And then on the flip side, Ken Jelinas, he had 20 saves last year against Maryland in a losing effort, 11-8, where Braden Irksa scored 4 goals for Maryland. Who can be that guy offensively for Hopkins? And a lot of people are down on the Blue Jays after losing to Ohio State. I was texting with my buddies during that game. I was watching it. And I said in the text group, I said, Caleb Fioch is not big taste. He's not like the goalies Hopkins has played the last couple weeks. Well, who made 2 huge saves, including one at the buzzer, to win the game for Ohio State? Big Tasty. And he's playing, you know, I know he's not in this game, but Tasty's back to being Tasty. But I think the goaltending edge in this game goes to Hopkins with Jelinas. I think the offensive edge goes to Maryland. I think the faceoff goes to Maryland. And I just think that, you know, where this game will be won or lost is the Hopkins offense against the Maryland defense. Can they make enough plays? Can Matt Collison get back on track? Can the attack please do something in this game? That's where I'm looking at for this one.
And I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to pick this one.
You haven't been as the black and blue lenses have not been as dark this year.
Yeah, I picked against the Jays a couple weeks ago, and they surprised me and won. My gut says to take the Terps in this one, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the Terps. I hope I'm wrong. They could spoil homecoming for the Blue Jays, but I'll take the Terps.
I guess what people really want to know is, will you be going to the Fiji Islander? And if so, will you burn the hut down? That was a tradition when I was in school. Whenever the Fiji Islander was about to wrap up, it was never over until somebody put a match to the hut.
And the hut.
There was a grass hut that was always
Oh, okay, the
connected.
grass hut. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the study area.
The
Nobody's
hut's
burning down the hut and
for
coming home.
Do they still do that?
No, the Fiji Islanders, nothing like when we were in school.
Yeah,
Remember, we used to have it on what is now the practice
The
field
practice field, yeah.
on the opposite side of Homewood Field, which is now turf, but that was just that big grass field.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
And
that's fun.
man, it was the greatest party of
That
the
was so
year.
much
I
fun.
got to give a shout out to our old friend Tom Calder, former athletic director. When he was the associate AD under Bob Scott, he would tell me, while I was in school, and then particularly after I graduated, he would say the Fiji Islander was by far the most difficult week of his life in a year. Dix, that Fiji Islander, can you talk to him? No, Mr. Calder, I cannot.
Well, they don't do that stuff anymore. Gosh, I just can't.
No. I don't even know where. I think it might be in the President's Garden now,
Yeah, it is. I
which
rather.
you are not doing anything unsavory at that residence.
No, you're not. I went a few years back. I think it was 2 years ago, and it was tame. It was like hanging out at like a beer. I think the beer garden in the stadium, like at Homewood Field, was more lively than at the Islander,
I believe it.
but it's still a good time. It's homecoming's always fun at Hopkins. It's a
It's a great time. The campus is alive. It's beautiful. It smells good.
It's like Hopkins is not the most social school, right? But we when we were there, we had found ways to have a good time and to blow off some steam. But it's hard to describe. It's like it just comes alive like for like 3 or 4 weeks at the end of the school year. There was the spring fair, there'd be homecoming, like exams, the weather gets nice and people would hang out on the like layout, sunbathe on the beach, and there'd be parties there at night. So and it just and then all of a sudden school's over and everybody goes home for the
Yeah,
summertime.
it was, and that month of like mid-April to mid-May, you want to enjoy all this stuff, but oh, guess what? You got finals too.
Yeah, and
You're
you
like,
were
come
playing.
on, man. We just like, I had no idea that person looked like that. They've been covered up all year.
And you had lacrosse though. You were still playing lacrosse like usually through
Exactly.
Memorial Day. And
Yeah.
for me, I was just like done school basically.
All you had to put up with was your spring football game. Oh, wait, did you guys even have a spring football
They didn't even have spring like football practice. All we just like would wait and stuff. Now they have spring. They have spring like football practice now, but we didn't have to do any of that stuff. And we were just like, I was just going to school, and I was just a regular student at that point, having fun. And
You were
you were.
busy rolling the BIA courts, the
Oh, that's
BIA
true.
fields.
True. Yeah, BA softball and
Yeah.
doing all that stuff. All right, Dixie. Let's just remember, there's great games this week. Please get out and see a game, or set your DVR, make your schedule. This is the point of that season where you just don't want to miss it. So, get ready for some great lacrosse action this weekend. All right, Tix, time for our give and go. I got something for you. I mentioned a minute ago that the Hopkins Maryland game, they've been doing this for what, 131 years, 1895. All right. So I got a little trivia game for you. Okay. 131 years is a long time. That was a
It
long
is.
time ago, right? So here's what you're going to do. I'm going to name something And you're going to tell me whether it is older or younger than the Hopkins-Maryland rivalry. So basically, okay, you decide whether it started before, the thing I say, whether it was invented before or after 1895. All right. I've got 15 items. Some of them they're pretty good. And I'll do like a top 10. I'll narrow this down to 10. Where do you want 15? That's 15. Let's do all 15. I got a list here. All right, here we go. Again, you're going to tell me the game of basketball. The game of basketball. Is basketball older or younger than the Hopkins-Maryland rivalry?
I'll say younger.
It is older.
Wow.
1891. Game of basketball was James Naismith wrote the rules in 1891. All right. So
James Naismith, a.k.a. Will Forte. Have you seen those commercials?
Oh, that's what that was?
Yeah.
Oh, they did a bit during the CBS, in between games. And I now you make sense. It was so terrible. Some of the bits
they tried to
do, like the talking basketball and stuff. Oh, my God.
Yeah. In that situation, they should just let Barkley talk. That's all.
Oh, he's the best.
He is the most entertaining broadcaster.
Next one. Baseball. The game of baseball. Is it older or younger than the Hopkins-Maryland rivalry that started in 1895?
Younger.
Older.
Jesus.
1839. This is way.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Yeah, 1839 is like when they think like Abner Doubleday that's a myth kind of thing. But there was a guy like Cartwright who formalized the rules of baseball in 1845. So baseball is much older than the rivalry of
hockey. Oh, for God's sakes. I suck at this.
Duckpin bowling.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Baltimore tradition, duckpin bowling. Was it – when was the first duckpin bowling? Was it before or after this rivalry started?
Younger.
Correct.
Oh, good. Look at me. I got one.
Correct. You got one. It's not hard. You got a 50-50 chance, really.
Yeah, right.
Unless you like –
here's this isn't much of a give and go. Like, this is more just like you're giving to me.
Well, the giving part was this. All right. The game of volleyball.
Oh, God. Younger.
Trick question. It was invented in 1895.
Oh, God.
But I'll give it to you because, I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. These are more fun. The invention of the zipper.
How did they zipper. Keep their britches up?
Yeah, did the Hopkins players have a zipper in 1895? Think of it that way.
What on their fur?
Britches.
The zipper is older.
Correct.
Yeah. You got to be able to keep your fly up.
1893, two years okay. older than the Hopkins-Maryland rivalry. All right. Ice cream scoop. Like the,
the primitive one or the one that we have now?
What we use now. I think it's like the modern ice cream scoop. You dip in some water.
Younger. Younger.
Correct. You're on a roll, man.
Yeah. It's now I got you figured out.
Yeah, you got this one. All right. The airplane.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Orville and Wilbur Wright.
Be the Wright brothers. Holy
crap. Wright brothers.
When did they go from Kitty Hawk? That's the airplane younger.
It is. 1903. Yeah. Oh, man. You figured this game out. All right. The escalator. The first escalator that had a patent on it. Is it older or younger than the Hopkins-Maryland rivalry?
I mean, that's like engineering and, younger.
Wrong.
Wow.
1891, the first escalator.
All right.
The tea bag.
Which one?
the little cloth bag that you put tea leaves in.
Right. Okay.
This one surprised me.
Maybe because I'm thinking maybe one wasn't, the one we're thinking of wasn't documented. T teabag.
What, an ancient Rome?
Oh, okay. Older.
It is the teabag device that you make tea with is younger. It was like 1903.
Oh, then why'd you say Roman Empire? Because I
well, the
thought you were talking about like Caligula.
That's the one you're thinking.
Okay.
Yeah, it's isn't it hard to believe they've been drinking tea forever? And they didn't have like the device to like not get the tea all over your like in the drink.
Was it invented in Britain? 'Cause
1903. No, in America.
They love their tea.
Yeah, right here. Because the diesel engine.
God. I mean, I'm pretty good at history, and I'm sucking at this. The diesel engine is older.
Correct.
Cool.
1892.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you.
I don't really have any idea.
I'll do. Yeah, just make it. I'll do two more. We'll do another 12. All right. The sousaphone.
What is that?
A walking tuba, like, you know, the sousaphone.
Oh, yeah, you played that in a band.
I will say, like, I'll give you this. It was sousaphone and candy corn, same year. It was a two for one.
So this is...
You're not allowed to Google this.
No, I'm not.
Candy corn and the sousaphone. Named after John Philip Sousa, but not invented by John Philip Sousa.
Can't see the sousaphone. I think I got, but the candy corn. I'll just say that they're both older.
Oh, they're both younger.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Last one. And this, you got to use your history in my mind for this because it makes sense. The teddy bear.
Oh God,
teddy.
That's definitely younger because that was Teddy Roosevelt.
Correct. 1902. Only 7 years after the first Hopkins.
Wow. Miracle. Okay. Yeah.
But you are right about that. Yeah. Teddy Roosevelt. All right. So your tabulation, you got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seven. I'm giving you credit for 7. 7 out of 12. It's passing.
Okay. Yeah. That seems like a good place to stop.
Seems like a great place to stop. A reminder, DeFly and Dixie Podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Special thanks to this week's guest, Max Watkinson. We always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at deflyanddixie@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter or Instagram at deflyanddixie. And share this with a friend. When you're listening to a tailgate, it's really easy. Hit the little square with the arrow, and that's how you share it. You see it on your phone. Thanks for listening, and as always, enjoy the games.